From WGCU, this is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. In a place called the Sunshine State, you'd think solar power would be the dominant source of energy. Finally, it's coming to the fore, with Florida Power & Light boasting a dozen solar energy plants. Private citizens are also making the investment, installing their own panels, storing solar energy, and harnessing the state's most marketed resource, sunshine. We'll talk with power companies and solar power pioneers about what's taken so long and where things are headed. Plus, this is the time of year for fasting for certain religions. Catholics and some other Christians will forego meat on Fridays for Lent, and numerous other religions will celebrate springtime holidays, which involve food rules and restrictions. But where did these rules come from? We'll talk with an FGCU professor of history about where these traditions came from and how they've evolved. Plus, we'll talk with a local chef about local fish options that aren't the ubiquitous grouper and snapper for those seeking to expand their Fish Fridays. But first, the news. This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. It is the time of year when fish becomes a popular dish. A little later in the show, we'll look at the history and influences behind Fish Fridays, and we'll find out about lesser-known fish in the Gulf of Mexico that could add some variety for those who go meatless. But first, the Sunshine State has been seriously lacking when it comes to solar power. Despite being the third most populous state in the country, the Solar Energy Industries Association notes that Florida is outshined by states like California, New Jersey, and even Massachusetts when it comes to generating power by harnessing the sun's energy. But now that's beginning to change. Florida Power & Light now has 11 solar power installations operating in the state, generating more than 335 megawatts of electricity, which is enough to power about 120,000 homes. And none of that reflects the growth in home solar installations, from large-scale solar electric solutions to more common solar water heaters. The future of solar power in Florida is bright, but price, technology, and competition still cloud the way toward a totally renewable future. Here to talk about how the solar industry has matured locally, nationally, and globally is Neville Williams, who is the author of the book Sun Power. He's a solar power pioneer who's been working in the industry since the administration of Jimmy Carter. Welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you, Julie.
Here to discuss FPL solar expansion and what else the utility has in store for small-scale and large-scale solar projects is utility spokesperson Alice Daly. Welcome to the show, Alice.
Hi, Julie. Thanks for having me.
Also joining us today is Jason Zumlansky, the Chief Consultant and Project Manager for West Coast Operations for Urban Solar. It's a solar contractor putting in solar energy installations across South Florida. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Julie. Good to be here.
Solar power in Florida. What do you want to know? Are you using any solar energy in your life, or are you on the fence about the technology? Call in with your questions for our experts at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. I want to begin with an open question that might be able to shed some light, pun very much intended there, on what we're talking about when it comes to solar power. We hear a lot about megawatts of power, but how much does a solar array that generates 1 megawatt of electricity actually cost? Who wants to grab that one?
Well, I'll grab it. Okay, a megawatt is a lot of power. There's kilowatts, megawatts, terawatts. 1 megawatt now, 1 megawatt hour actually is how you rate it, it would be about $30 a megawatt hour. So it's hard to compute this in a few seconds on the radio here, but it means that if you build large arrays of solar, centralized power, it's cheaper now than wind, gas, coal, and nuclear. And they price these on a megawatt basis. But most people are interested in what it costs on a house or on a business. So businesses don't put megawatts on their roofs. Only Mandalay Bay and Las Vegas put a megawatt on its roof, but that's a lot of power.
So price per megawatt solar is less expensive when you're looking at it on a large scale.
Yeah. You price solar by kilowatt hour cost. That's how people are used to paying for it.
Oh, okay.
And Julie, I'll add to that.
Sure.
In fact, we find that large-scale solar, which the industry now refers to as universal solar, such as the large solar farms we're building around the state, are 2.5 times. You can build 2.5 times the amount of solar at the large scale than you can for a typical-sized rooftop, residential rooftop installation. And again, and that a lot of factors go into that. The ability to buy panels in bulk, the efficiencies of building in one spot, to make it more cost effective.
Yeah, buying in bulk always. Anybody that's gone to Costco knows that buying in bulk really helps out with your price comparison. Neville Williams, you've been working in the solar industry for decades. Take us back to the dark ages of solar power, when it was a fringe idea, and tell me a little bit about how it's changed to bring us to where we're at today.
Well, briefly, I got involved during the Carter administration, and they were pushing photovoltaics. Seemed like a good idea. Amazing to me, you could make electricity from sunlight. It got to pique my interest. After Carter left, I went away for 10 years, came back, and it was $90 a watt then for solar. It was used largely in space satellites. 10 years later, it was down to $5 a watt, and I said, well, you know, we can put this around the world on poor people's houses and use a battery and lights, and they could have electricity in the third world. So that's what I did for 15 years. And then when solar dropped to like $3 a watt, it was time to sell it to Americans. So I set up a company in Maryland. So I sort of followed it, but it all had to do with price as it grew, as the technology improved and manufacturing improved, volumes improved, and we're now down to 60 cents a watt for solar. It's the cheapest energy there is, and I never dreamed we'd see this.
Yeah, are you surprised? I mean, when you look at things now and how technology has advanced?
Yes, of course. We didn't expect it. It's really exploded, and I think that's why you have some conflict between independent solar producers and providers and sales of large systems as well as rooftop systems and the utilities, because it's cutting into utility profits, you know, in many states. And that's why, because everybody can do it. It's an energy supply, energy production form that anybody can do.
Well, the sun's there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Alice Daly with FPL, your utility has several solar power plants online in the state and since 2009, and more of them are coming online through 2018. In all, more than 335 megawatts of electricity. How many homes does that power?
Well, the 335 megawatts, we currently have powers about 60,000 homes. We're now building, and last year we built three 74.5 megawatt solar facilities. Each of those powers about 15,000 homes. Some of the other earlier facilities we did were smaller. So, for example, in 2009, we built Florida's first solar energy center, photovoltaic or PV solar energy center in DeSoto, not too far from where you all are, and it was 25 megawatts. At the time, that was the largest PV solar plant in the country. Now we're building solar energy centers that are three times that size and cost less. So that, I think, gives you some good context as to how the industry is advancing.
Things are definitely moving pretty quick, and I wanted to make sure we introduce everybody before we go to the phones, which are certainly lighting up. There's a lot of interest out there. I wanted to introduce also Jason Zumlansky with Urban Solar, and you're a solar contractor who installs large and small-scale solar solutions at homes and businesses in Southwest Florida. Could you break it down for us right now? Where does the solar equipment you install come from, and what kind of things are available for people?
Thanks, Julie. We talk in the kilowatt range, not megawatt or gigawatt or anything like that. So we're talking about small-scale solar that's installed on homes and businesses. Most of our equipment hopefully comes from the U.S. if we can find a U.S.-made panel. But frankly, a lot of the equipment's made outside of the U.S. right now. The equipment that goes onto homes is very simple. It's a solar panel, an inverter, and some wiring that ties into the FPL utility grid. Very simple to go in, costs about $15,000 to $50,000 on a home, and I know that's a large range, but it depends on how much electricity you use. You can offset any amount of your electricity from a very small amount up to all of your usage.
So it's possible to install solar on your house and completely just power your own house from that?
Absolutely. A grid interconnected system works by working in parallel with the utility grid. And what happens is you have two utilities, essentially, your own utility that you're running on your rooftop and FPL or LCEC locally. And what happens is you sell your excess energy back to FPL. They keep it in the bank for you and then give it back to you when you need it.
Well, that's a nice arrangement. That kind of works out pretty good. I wanted to go to the phones real quick because we have a lot of people that are really interested in this. First, we have Victor from North Fort Myers. Victor, you have a question?
Definitely. First of all, one comment. I want and I need, just like everybody else wants and needs, this solar option as far as power, electricity, and such. I'm glad the gentleman that just spoke mentioned that $15,000 to $50,000 is a lot of money. Is there any way for FPL or their program offset some of these costs? As I, as an average homeowner, am making a whole lot of money, although I'm professionally, my tie and my suit and everything. I'm barely scraping by at $9.50 an hour. Luckily, I'm owning my home shortly. But what kind of assistance can be given to homeowners such as myself who can't possibly afford $15,000, $20,000, $30,000? I'll just answer off the air, please. And thank you so much for bringing this topic up.
All right, thanks. So I think his question is he's talking about putting solar on his home. Now, that's a private decision that is an individual deciding to do that. And what he's asking about is whether or not FPL is involved in helping people set up their own private. Is that what the question sounded like to you?
Well, I think what he's getting at here is that is a big chunk of change for most people. It's the cost of a car, essentially, to put solar on your home. Nobody buys a car by going down to the dealer and putting cash down, or very few of us do. We finance it, and financing arrangements are available through local solar contractors or large national companies. So all of that money doesn't have to come out of your pocket. There's also a tax credit available. That's the one big incentive that's available in Florida. It's a federal tax credit. And so financing the system is typically the way people buy it. Not many people are paying cash for it. And what ends up happening is your payment to your solar contractor ends up being similar to what you would pay your utility, but you're locking in the cost of energy over time.
Okay. And FPL?
So, and I just want to add to that, one of the reasons why there is not a higher penetration of rooftop solar in the state of Florida is because it has been cost prohibitive, as Jason mentioned, for most people. And the reason why is the payback time. If you make an investment in a rooftop solar installation that you own, FPL's bills are so much lower than the national average. In fact, they decreased three times over the last 2 years. You're not going to make back that money for 16 years, perhaps 18 years, based on what our rates are. So that has been a challenge. Now, with the cost coming down for everyone with solar, that's a good thing for everyone who wants to see more solar, but our low bills have definitely delayed the payback, as opposed to if you look at a state like Hawaii, where there is a tremendous amount of rooftop solar. However, their electric bills are 3 to 4 times as high as what FPL customers pay. So that payback will be much faster.
Mm-hmm. And we have another call coming in from Robert in Cape Coral talking about the difference in states. Robert, what would you like to say?
Yeah, I'm originally from New York State, and New York is not exactly known for its sunshine, which, of course, is the reason why I'm down here in Florida, the Sunshine State. The observation I'm making is that we have a lot more solar up north than I'm seeing anything like that down here. I believe that it has everything to do with the incentives, not only federal, but for state. New York State is definitely more progressive, and states have ranged from subsidies or incentives all the way to where they're actually talking about taxing people for the solar that they produce. I'm not entirely sure where Florida is, but I would guess that there are few, if any, incentives. Just simply by looking around, I just don't see much solar here.
And that sounds like a good question for Neville Williams. I would like to ask you, Neville, what are you seeing in Florida versus other states?
Well, there are no solar renewable energy credits because those were defeated when the new governor came in after Crist. There's no renewable portfolio standard. Those two things drive the solar business up in most northern states, including Maryland, where my company was or still is. But Julie's right. We do have low rates here. It was hard to pencil out the return as fast, but that was 3 or 4 years ago. Now I've seen returns on houses in 5 or 6 years at the new rates. So it's and plus, you remember, when you're paying the solar power is costing you 4 or 5 to 6 to 7 cents a kilowatt hour, whereas you're paying FPL the full rate. So That's one of the reasons that FPL is not too happy about too much rooftop solar, if they can help it. But by law, net metering is allowed, so you can put solar on your house. And I don't know why it's not. I think, you know, it's not the rich state you think it is. A lot of retirees, a lot of people not making enough money here. And we have wind loading restrictions because of hurricanes, which makes it a little more expensive to install. But it's still a booming business. I mean, I know many young solar contractors like Jason's company, and, boy, they're doing really great work. So it's growing. It's finally – we've put some of the politics besides with these last two amendments and taxes and so on. And so I think it's wide open. But there still are some restrictions, as the gentleman pointed out.
We are talking about solar power in Florida, and I wanted to give a shout-out if anybody had any questions or comments that they would like to share with us at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. And on Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we are at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. And Alice Davis from Florida – I'm sorry, Alice Daly with Florida Power and Light. I wanted to ask you a question, and I'm sorry that I kind of cut you off there, but –
okay.
Can you tell me how much is solar as far as the power? Where is the most of the electricity that's powering South Florida coming from? Is it coming from coal, oil, natural gas, nuclear, or solar? What percentage are you at?
We have one of the cleanest mixes and the lowest emissions profile, Julie, of any utility in the country. And at the same time, we also have bills that are far below the national average. In fact, if you look at some states that have more solar installed, their emissions rate is still higher than ours. And that's because when they're not using solar, such as at night or when the weather doesn't permit, they're using dirtier generation sources such as coal or oil. We use very little coal or oil. In fact, we reduced our use of oil by 99%, and that has saved our customers more than $8 billion, and it has also prevented over 108 million tons of carbon emissions. So our mix of affordable clean energy includes efficient generation using natural gas, nuclear, and now more solar. So now that the cost is coming down for solar and we can cost-effectively build solar, and that means the solar plants that we are building for our customers will pay for themselves over the life of the plant, and in addition to that, save them close to $40 million in fuel.
There were nods around the room when you said that you have very clean energy in Florida. But so what percent would you say right now we're at with solar, and where do you want it to be?
Well, right now our fuel, our solar, is in line with the country's, which is about 1%. That's not including the last three plants that we built over on the west coast of Florida, solar plants, and that's not including the eight new plants that we're developing. But when you look at, but currently 1%, and then but when you compare that to the national average, while the national average is about 1% for solar, the rest of their generation is made up of much more oil and coal, where ours is clean natural gas and nuclear.
Okay, I want to go to the
important. We want to have a mix of a diversified fuel mix. So solar is a fantastic technology. However, we know that at night we need a backup source. And so for us, that is natural gas and nuclear. And so together, that mix of clean, affordable energy we think is the right approach to continuing to be clean while keeping bills low for customers, which is important for the economy, important for the continued growth of our state.
And I want to go back to the phones because we have Michael on from Fort Myers who's been very patient on the phone, and he has a question more towards private home installations. Michael, what was your question?
Yes, I was wanting to know, is there any limitation with the zoning on how many panels you can put up on your house? Or let's say I have a barn beside my house. It's like 1,600 square foot. I was wanting to know, can I put it on my house, both and the barn also? That's my first question. And I was wanting to know my second part. Let's say I got the most I could get, like $50,000 worth of solar panels. Can I amortize that over an amount of years off my taxes, or is it just a one-time deduction for the first year that you get it? Thank you.
Okay, and that sounds like a question for Jason. Are there limitations for how many panels people can have on their property?
Michael, no, there's really no limitation on how much solar you can install up to, when you get into the large commercial or utility scale size, then you start running into limitations. Your only limitation is really how large your transformer serving your property is. But for practical purposes, you wouldn't want to install more solar than is necessary to create the energy that you use. That's just based on the economics of it, because once you produce more than you consume on an annual basis, you only get the wholesale rate for the electricity after that. So really, there's no limitation per se, but there is practical limits on what you'd want to do. And with regards to your tax question, you can... Now, this is a question for your tax accountant, of course, but you can generally carry forward tax credits to future years if you can't use the entire credit in the current tax year.
Okay, that would definitely be an accountant question, and it is the season to ask accountants about everything, right? We have another question on the line from Bill in Naples. Bill, what would you like to ask?
Tax credits to future years, the entire credit.
Bill, are you with us?
Oh, yes. Hello. Okay. Ready?
Yes.
Okay.
What would you like to ask?
Oh, yeah. Well, here's the thing. I'm a little bit familiar with the power industry and solar. And one of the things that I always thought about is our whole utility structure was set to have centralized power. And in the evolution of the United States, it used to be everybody had their own coal stoves. We had our own lanterns, et cetera. But then the utility structure was set up to centralize power generation rather than have people do it themselves. In view of that historical thing and the fact that we have an infrastructure set up for it, the thing that I'm thinking of is if Florida Power and Light had a way of financing large-scale solar power, this is a radical idea, but issue bonds, which are actually tax-free, like a tax-free municipal bond, so that people could actually buy bonds. So FPL would be using that, and they may have more of a financial incentive to go to solar if they do this on a statewide basis. Of course, it would require legislation, et cetera, et cetera. That's my thought for the people in the power business. I was involved with Philadelphia Electric years ago when they built that nuclear power plant.
Okay. So what you're suggesting is municipal bonds, tax-free municipal bonds, in order to try to continue to give additional funding to a private industry that is doing power on a statewide level.
That's already happening in this state. It's called PACE, Property Assessed Clean Energy, where the municipalities and counties can float tax-free bonds, finance people's houses or small commercial developments, or weatherization for that matter. And it's popular in about 25 states. And you pay back your loan on 30-year tax assessment. You pay it as part of your annual property tax. It's a very good idea. But as far as utilities doing it,
I'd like to make sure also that Bill, who I believe it was Bill who was just on the phone, understands that we are building large-scale solar energy centers around the state. We have planned for 8 new ones that will be, by this time next year, serving our customers. That'll be 120,000 additional customers powered by solar. So we are very incentivized and consistently looking to do more solar where it makes economic sense for customers.
I wanted to switch now. WGCU has an ongoing project that we call Curious Gulf Coast, where we ask our listeners, viewers, and readers to send us questions that they want to get answers to in Southwest Florida. And today's show is in part spurred by a question from Curious Gulf Coast. So I want to go to that question now.
Hello, my name is Stuart Beller. I'm in Moorhaven, Florida. And I have a question for Curious Gulf Coast. My question would be, couldn't Florida be leading in all renewables in wind, sun, and biomass fuels if they had the right PR and they had the right education programs going on? How do we get this to happen and possibly Florida Power and Light, who's, you know, has the deep pockets, help make this happen.
And this sounds like a question we've kind of been addressing this throughout the show for Alice Daly with FPL. Do you feel that FPL is doing enough to expand its solar, and would you like to see it do more?
We want to do more, and we're looking to do more. And specifically to that listener's question, we are extremely involved in the science, technology, engineering, and math programs around the state to encourage young people to pursue careers in energy, and of course, and develop new types of energy, and find ways to make things like solar more practical for every day. And I can tell you, we were just over on the West Coast last month, where we were commissioning and celebrating our three new solar energy centers coming online, and we did it in conjunction with the Florida Solar Energy Center. And we had 50 schools, from hundreds of kids from around the state, who were competing for, with solar race cars they developed. And we'd also had a solar cook-off where the students had created ovens that were powered by the sun and had to cook something. We had, you know, and the best cake won. So we're very committed to the educational component within this state, and see it as key in everything we do.
So, Jason, do you deal with any public perception issues in 2017?
Absolutely, and education is key in our industry. As much as I'm a solar contractor and salesperson and all that, my day-to-day activities are really consultation and education. Helping people understand what a solar energy investment looks like, how it affects their pocketbook now and in the future, is really key to making the technology more prolific in the nation, in the state. And ultimately, people have perceptions about solar that are not correct. For example, batteries being necessary, that's just not the case. And it's education that I provide to customers every day.
And Neville Julie, Williams.
I'd like to add something to that. I've heard a couple people, I've heard actually a Neville say, you know, the utilities don't like rooftop solar. And I have to tell you, that's not true. That's a misconception. In fact, we work with customers every day who are interested and have the means and the ability to install their own solar systems. In fact, we give them free tools where they can go online and see how much solar energy they're selling back to our utility. They can see what they can overlay that with the weather, some really dynamic tools to help educate them more on their own solar systems.
And Neville, you had a comment?
Well, yes. You know, I applaud what Florida Power and Light's doing with solar. I visited the 75-megawatt plant at Babcock Ranch. Really impressive. But what people don't seem to understand is there's been a concerted policy in this state that's 46 states who are allowed to have independent solar providers, which in what my company did in Maryland. And you sell power through power purchase agreements, and it's third-party finance. That's illegal in Florida. And Florida Power and Light, through their lobbying for 25 years, has made sure that stays illegal. Only one in three or four states prohibit third-party finance. So when people say, when I tell people in speeches that Walmart is the largest user of solar in America, but not a single Walmart store has solar in Florida. Not a single Kohl's department store has 200, and they're doing 180 more. And I can go on with Google and Apple and huge corporations. This is third-party financed. They take the tax credit, is Wall Street finances it, massive funds. That's totally illegal in Florida. And what happens is these buyers, if you have a Walmart, they pay two bills. They pay a bill to Florida Power and Light or the local utility, wherever they are, and then they pay another bill to the third-party provider, which is about a third as much money. So that's where they save the money.
Who's this third-party provider? I'm kind of confused.
Thousands of companies that finance solar around the United States, but not in Florida because it's illegal here.
So I kind of got confused way back there at the beginning. You said that there are what is it that is illegal specifically?
Third party finance. Because if you sell power, so you can sell solar systems, you can lease solar equipment, you can sell people something to put on their roof and it'll go into the grid and back and forth. You can't sell power. you have to be a designated utility. And in 1980, FPL went to the Supreme Court and got a ruling in that they have exclusive territorial rights, as do the other utilities in Florida, and no one else can sell power. My company does $50 million a year just selling power, right? They install systems, and then they sell the people the power. And a third party owns the system and finances it. My company builds them.
Well, that's
not a model allowed in Florida. My company would be in here and create 10,000 jobs overnight.
I hear Neville talking about another business model, which clearly has been very successful.
In 46 states.
Doing that well. I can say that, though. I want to make sure people understand when you say customers who own their own solar systems, such as the kind that Jason helps Floridians with, are able to sell their power back to FPL.
Yes, but so no one else. No,
but that's just a private leasing. Individual thing.
If you're a customer with your own solar installation, private rooftop installation, for example, you are able to sell that power of yours back to FPL.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I see what you're saying. So an individual person, but what Neville's talking about is a different business model as opposed to an individual homeowner.
Correct.
Yeah, we cover big, you know, shopping centers, schools, hospitals, most of the schools in the state of Maryland. Those schools don't pay for the power. Every school in Florida could be covered, and it wouldn't cost them anything because there's money out there from Wall Street to finance it and sell that school district the power. And my company builds those, as do many, many companies. And
okay.
That's happening in 46 states, and that's why this is not the Sunshine State.
Oh, okay. So that's what you're saying, that kind of legislation
The Floridians for Solar Choice tried to get a constitutional amendment passed, and it didn't get the signatures in time. FPL funded a different amendment, and that they spent $20 million trying to sell us that amendment, and it was defeated. So now the air is clear. We know where everyone stands, and let's see who wins.
I'd love to comment on that, Julie, if you wouldn't mind. I can tell you that the amendment that Neville is speaking of was proposed by the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy, had backing from that, a very political group, and who is funded by large out-of-state solar companies such as Neville's. And that bill, which would have, had it been on the ballot and passed, would have stripped all consumer protection from the solar industry, because it would have said that the solar industry would have no regulation.
That's absolutely wrong.
No state regulation, or no local regulation. So as a utility who is responsible for serving all of the customers within our service territory and providing them with electricity, safe, reliable, and affordable electricity, that's something that was a concern, not just of ours, but of many other organizations. So
okay. Well, the
Amendment 1 was originally created in order to stop that from happening.
Well, let's –
so
okay, these are all kind of things from the past, and I don't want to step on you, but I want to not get into amendments that have passed or failed and what we feel about those. But I do have one caller who's been incredibly patient on the line. Rhett from Fort Myers has a question to talk about solar and where it's at today. Rhett, what would you like to ask?
Yeah, you know, as a homeowner, I was curious, you know, given the cost of how expensive the solar equipment is, what would be the ramifications or expenses given homeowner's insurance?
Okay, so what would be the insurance applications on something like this? Jason, do you address that ever when you're dealing with customers?
Every day.
Yep.
You know, because we do live in what Neville described as a high wind area, we have some unique insurance requirements. Generally speaking, we tell people to contact their insurance agent to make sure. But if there's no specific exclusion against solar panels in your insurance policy, generally it will cover it. But again, talk to your insurance agent. Generally, if you have to add something to your policy, it's very minimal cost.
You may need a rider.
Maybe. Need a rider.
Just depends on your policy.
Right.
All right. Well, we have run out of time today, so I want to leave it there and thank our guests. I really appreciate you coming in and illuminating, once again with the pun, the subject of solar energy. Neville Williams, author and solar pioneer. Also Jason Zumlansky, solar contractor with Urban Solar, and Alice Daly, FPL spokesperson. Thank you all for being here.
Thanks, Julie.
Thank you.
Coming up, if you've ever wondered where religious food rules and fasting came from, we'll have an answer for you. And if you're looking to expand your Gulf fish repertoire beyond snapper and grouper to try some of the other fish in the sea, we'll have some options for you after this quick break. Just
since you broke my